Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is a show about what is a guide dog, how you get a guide dog, when you get a guide dog, where you get a guide dog, and most of all, why do you want to get a guide dog? CAGDU, Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc., is the sponsor of CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. I am your host, Robin Radio Ray Razor, and I am on my seventh dog, which is a female coated German Shepherd. And people say, what is a coated German Shepherd is? A coated German Shepherd is, out of all shepherds are born, anywhere from 3 to 5% coated shepherds, which mean they got a little longer hair, their ears is a little larger, and most people say they're a little more intelligent. Now, I didn't have 7 German Shepherds, and I can say this shepherd I had, Miss Raven, seems to be a little more tad on the ball, but that's just from me. So anyway, you're listening to CAGDU, Guide Dog, CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. Again, I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. And at microphone number 2 is our engineer and our announcer. And how are you doing today, Miss Renee?
Mr. Reverend Ray, I am doing great. I'm enjoying the flowers blooming, the trees budding. It's beautiful. I know people that have allergies are suffering. And I am sorry, but it's gorgeous out there.
After this winter and 2020, anything that's just note of something alive and beautiful is really, really something to be a blessing and look forward to.
It is.
Now, and you know, so much, I don't want to say negative, but so much upheaval is going on with the George, the Floyd's trial, and I don't know, something happened with the people that got some shots with the Johnson & Johnson. We don't, our infrastructure in the country, we realize that the bridges are falling down and the roads ain't what they used to be.
we need some beauty in our lives, absolutely.
Yeah. So anything positive that we could think of and we could dwell on is a good thing. And that's what I wanted to say. I like every Sunday is something called Dog Tales. It's a show that you should look at and talk about dogs and all aspects of dogs. And the Dog Tale every Sunday. Oh, I look at that. I come on at 9 o'clock. So check that out. You can check it out on your computer. But it's just so much fun. But anyway, we are going to stay on a positive note, and we have a very special guest today, as we always have on CAGDU, About Your Dog. And you know, people love dogs. I just see where we live in a complex of over 2,877 apartments, about 9,000 people, and I tell you, I think we got at least 9,000 dogs running around here. But it is a complex that is dog friendly. So it's just amazing. It's like a dog city or something. But anyway, we'll move on. So, Ms. Renee, give us our rundown and lineup for today's show.
I would be glad to. But we always begin with stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a dog guide. And our Joyce Feinberg is our guest. She was a successful technical specialist for blood leasing equipment. She traveled all over the country. And then she began to lose her sight at age 30. And Joyce shares her choices and adjustments to her new reality. And in our second half, we will take a look into Charlie's Corner. So back over to you, Reverend Ray.
All right. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah, so our segment of Stop Dogging Me Around. I won't try to sing Jackie Wilson's song, Stop Dogging Me Around. But anyway, Stop Dogging Me Around, the good, the bad, the ugly, using a guide dog. There are so many wonderful things about using a guide dog. Well, one of the things I will point out that, and this not using a cane versus a guide dog, all right, because you really need to know both. But in using a guide dog, as I was the other day, now complex, as I say, we have so many people moving every month. And, of course, people don't take everything with them when they move. They leave stuff all over the sidewalk and at the dumpster and all of that. And one of the great things about having a guide dog, if it's properly trained and you keep up their skills and obedience, they will take you around a chair that was broken and they left on the sidewalk. They would take you around that trash that people had dropped and all. And that's the good thing. The bad thing is, though, you got to pay attention to your dog, because that bag of trash that they dropped with them chicken bones on the ground, that dog will scoop them up. So that's why it's so important to keep up your dog's obedience exercises and pay attention in the harness what your dog is doing, because these dogs are very intelligent, and they get to the point that they know what they can get away with and what they can't get away with. And always on this show, we know the ugly part of it is if you're on your second dog or more, that you have lost a guide dog. And that is a thing that, you know, we all deal with if we get from the second dog on. And a lot of people have a real emotional transition and after getting their first dog. And usually the guide dog schools try to tell you in a gentle way, don't get so attached to the dog to the point that your separation is such anxiety. And then when you do get another dog, you start comparing it with that dog. All right. So, and I don't want to say the ugly thing of it, but that can be, I have known people that have gotten guide dogs, and they just, when they were after that first dog, they ever get another dog. Or when they did get another dog, it just, the comparison and the bonding just wasn't there, and they just never used a guide dog again. So anyway, That is Stop Dogging Us Around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. And that is brought to you by Real-Time Pain Relief. Because if you walking dogs like she's supposed to, you need some pain relief to put on your knees and stuff and your ankles and your feet. And Real Time is the best smelling, most effective Real Time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on and the pain is gone. Back over to you, Ms. Renee, and introducing our guest for today.
Well, Joyce Feinberg traveled all over the country for her work, and then she began to lose her sight at age 30. And Joyce is going to share with us the choices and the adjustments that she made as she began to lose her sight. Welcome, Joyce.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Reverend Ray.
Good afternoon, and thank you for your patience. We've been trying to get Ms. Joyce on as our guest, and we have one thing to another and another thing to another, so we appreciate her patience and her diligence for coming on as our special guest. So, Joyce, we always like to start off with people knowing something about the person, because now with the Internet, you can go on the Internet and find out about anything, occupations and all. So we like to get to know the real person. So if you could just give us a verbal bio about you, was you put together by a science kit? Or, you know, pulled out of a magic hat? Or, I mean, just how did you come about?
Well, my father was a traveling engineer in the 60s, and so whenever he came home, he and my mother shared some special time together, and lo and behold, I eventually came out in the middle of two brothers. I have an older brother and a younger brother, and all of us grew up pretty much here in the state of Maryland, but in Montgomery County, although we were born, all three of us, along with my late mother, in Buffalo, New York. Needless to say, they got out of there quick with all that snow. So I went to public school. I was fully sighted. In fact, I had a nickname, Eagle Eyes, because I was always able to pick up and find things. I was always finding money on the sidewalk or, you know, signs that we needed to locate, that type of thing. And I even played tennis in both high school and college. But then I had always been interested in lab testing because I was very sick as a young child. And I went to college for that type of degree, which allows you to perform laboratory tests in hospitals, reference labs, doctor's offices. And I eventually got a job with the manufacturer of some of the equipment. And one of the primary things I did after starting as an engineer, which meant repairing and installing the equipment, is they asked me to go into the technical side to help train people how to use the equipment and how to interpret results. So that's what I did for the first 10 years of my career with this company, and that allowed me to start traveling quite a bit. And in fact, I used to have to travel outside the country just to get away from work because it was before the times of cell phones, really, and laptops. So they couldn't really get a hold of me, and that way I could really enjoy a vacation.
Wow.
So I started cruising and going to the Caribbean islands because I liked the warmth, as you were stating about springtime. And then, unfortunately, I was going in for some back surgery, and I was an undiagnosed diabetic in my mid to late 30s. And after coming out of surgery, I ended up then proceeding to go into a coma for a couple days, a diabetic coma. And once waking up from that, I ended up starting to lose my vision. Very quickly, I lost one eye completely within 6 months, and the other eye is pretty much legally blind, almost totally blind. And adapting to that, adapting to my job responsibilities, I had some pretty good managers at the time. They allowed me to do a lot of travel, which allowed me to travel by taxi and airplane as opposed to traveling by car. And I never really learned how to use a cane in the beginning. And then a friend of mine who was raised near Morristown, New Jersey, convinced me to apply for a guide dog because
Let me put a pin in that just for a moment, because I don't want to gloss over this. A lot of people who listen to our show are either recently blind or are new to blindness from health conditions and all. But let me rewind just a little bit. Here you are, a successful businesswoman, and we're coming up against the break. So I'll give you the question, and I'll give you a chance to think about it, and you can give me the answer on the other side of the break. You have a career that you planned for. This was exactly what you wanted to do. Here's this engineer with eagle eyes, and you begin to lose your sight. I want to talk about what was the interior discussion you were having with yourself. What were the words that kept you going? What were the things that kept you going? And I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. So we're up against the break. And we will hear the answer on the other side of the break.
Okay.
So you'll You're listening to CAG Do About Your Dog and You. Captain Ariel Guide Dog Users, Inc. is sponsoring this show, and I am your host, Reverend Ray Razor, and our very special guest, Ms. Joyce Feinberg, is going to come back on the other side, and we're going to open up a little more of her travels and her adventures. They're always adventures as blind people. We like to say it's an adventure. So as we bump out, we will be back on the other side of the break.
You are listening to CAGDU About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our special guest, Joyce Feinberg.
And Joyce, just before you answer Ms. Renee's question about your internal conversation you had with yourself, now, from a medical standpoint, you said that this was not discovered until later. With doing all this traveling and all of this and everything, did you have regular checkups? Or, I mean, obviously you had the money and you had the means and everything. So why didn't they discover this in like a regular checkup? And I don't know, your job, a lot of jobs, definitely have requirements in terms of physicals and all that kind of stuff. So what happened there? What was the reason that didn't happen?
Well, you made an assumption that I was seeing a doctor on a regular basis. I was like most young adults who were career-oriented. I never made time for myself. And even though I had a number of the symptoms, it could easily be explained away. So, unfortunately, that was my circumstance. And, yes, I did blood testing, but my specialty was a different area of the lab. Instead of chemistry, where the glucose reading would have been picked up on, I was in an area called hematology, which is your cells.
Okay. Well, something to note.
So, again, I was like most young people, especially in the early 2000s, late 1990s, that were more career-oriented as opposed to personal-oriented.
And invincible.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So as Ms. Renee was asking you some, I mean, it's just so ironic that you would lose your sight, not become, deaf or anything, and ironic of the eagle eye. I mean, how paradoxical. And you was considered, the eagle eye. And that is so interesting. So what were some of your inter conversations with yourself at the point where you were in your life?
Well, essentially, as I mentioned, I had some pretty good managers at that point in the company I had worked for, and I had worked for them for over 10 years, and they allowed me to do stuff at home initially and appoint me to special projects until I was able to come back full-time, and then allowed me to travel. As opposed to having to drive to locations, I was able to fly. And in fact, the first year I covered most of Florida when somebody had decided to go live in New Zealand with her husband for some strange reason. And essentially, my thoughts were, I have a job. It gives me a reason to get out of bed each morning. It gives me something to do. And instead of sitting there and pitying myself, I was always one to go out and do things and get things accomplished. And that's exactly what I did. So as I kept flying from place to place, I followed people's rear ends from the jet bridge to the baggage claim, because I never really knew about asking for the assistance.
You know, you talk about being a young woman when you lost your sight. I don't think we've ever covered very much of this on the show, but what happened to your social life?
Social life? What's a social life?
Oh, you were a workaholic.
Exactly. And again, really? When I would travel, I would generally travel Monday through Fridays. And prior to losing my vision, I would generally leave Monday morning in my car and come back Friday afternoon in my car. So there wasn't much of a social life, especially with guys. I was able to bring my tennis racket with me in my car, and I was able to set up tennis matches in certain areas, but that was very limited because I'd be working long hours and sometimes even working overnight based upon how the laboratory needed assistance. So, and then after losing my vision, again, it was very limited because I could not drive anymore. I wasn't going to ask my parents to chaperone me to any dates. And so it was one of those, okay, do I try and take paratransit there, and not having it be reliable, how do I get home? That type of thing. And even though, fortunately,
a 3-hour tour.
Exactly. Exactly. Many a time, even getting to work afterwards. But it was one of those things that I had very little social life, but I was also exhausted by the weekends also.
Right.
So well, then, so now you went to school where? I mean, you went to college, or you went straight out of high school into this job?
No, I went from high schools in Montgomery County to University of Maryland, Baltimore County for general 2-year undergraduate requirements. And then I finished up my 4-year bachelor's degree at the School of Medicine at the University of Maryland at Baltimore. So even though it was considered part of the School of Medicine, it was a separate program for what we call medical technologists, or I think they're now calling them clinical laboratory scientists now.
But let me ask you this. In college, that's where usually, you know, 90% of the people build long-lasting relationships. So in college, did you join any sorority or build relationships that lasted through, you know, up to now? I mean,
well, somewhat. I had some relationships in high school that I still maintain today, because most of them still live in the state of Maryland. But because UMBC at the time, University of Maryland, Baltimore County, was a commuter campus, and this was in the early 1980s, everybody went home on the weekends except for me. So there weren't any sororities or fraternities at that time, and I generally had the living area to myself. So those first 2 years, it wasn't a normal college experience. And then my last 2 years was in a specialized program, and in a sense, it was everybody living wherever, because there were not any dormitories except for nursing students. And I actually ended up living in a townhouse not too far from the campus with two dental students. So any relationships I had developed, I actually developed them more when I was working, because I would run into my schoolmates from that program in different laboratories around the state.
Wow. So what did you like best about that job, besides the travel?
The teaching. I really enjoyed working one-on-one with customers and helping them to get the equipment verified and ready for use and training the personnel, pretty much being a teacher.
So let me ask a follow-up question. So what lessons do you think your work life taught you?
Two. One, take care of yourself physically. Make sure you're seeing the proper doctors. Because even though I saw an optometrist on a yearly basis, he never picked up on the changes in my eyes. But the other regular doctor would have definitely picked up those changes. But also have fun. Enjoy life. I tried to go on cruises and meet people that way, but not liking a bar scene where it was smoky and I'm not into alcohol that much, it was difficult to meet new people.
But those are two good, I'm a bit shy. But those are two important things, and I think your cautionary tale of young people getting seen regularly is absolutely, all of us thought we were invincible when we were younger and probably neglected a lot of annual checkups and that kind of thing. So those are two great lessons to learn. Take care of yourself and have fun. Okay. Mm-hmm. Reverend Ray, I'm sorry, I just sort of followed up.
That's okay. But let me ask you this, George. Dan, when you started to lose your sight as an adult, what impact did that have on your relations or the response from your parents and siblings and other siblings?
I'll start out with my younger brother. Now, be aware, I have two brothers, one younger, one older. My younger brother, the age difference between my younger and older brother is 4 years. So we were all very close in age, but I was much closer to my younger brother. And he was able to, as soon as my parents called him and told him that I had gone into a coma, he, his wife, and two-year-old son came down and sat by my bedside. And the first thing I remember coming out of the coma was my sister-in-law talking to me. And I'm thinking, why am I hearing her voice? She's supposed to be up in Boston. And I come to find that they had come down to help my parents out. So my relationship with my younger brother, his wife, and at that point, two-year-old, he's now 23, 24 years old, plus his sister and two brothers, is very good. They would help lead me around or say, watch that route, that type of thing, so that I would not trip and fall. And after a while, their shoulders were great heights. Now they're a little bit tall for me as they've grown older. My older brother was in Texas, and unfortunately, my relationship with him had actually deteriorated before all this had happened, but it's now much better due to other factors, and I, in fact, just recently went to his daughter's wedding in Michigan last year, one of the few things I got to do last year, and my parents, yeah, I can't forget my parents. My mother never really understood my limitations. It's like, why don't you come down here? Mom, do you know how much that's going to cost? But my father understood, and he would make the efforts to come up and visit me in Germantown and help me out with errands, and then we would always try and get together for dinner. So it pretty much stayed the same. And in, after I lost my dream job, I ended up moving in with my father. So
you know,
our
relationship
has stayed strong.
Great.
Yep.
I want to ask you a question about your nieces and nephews when they were younger, the ones that were around you. Did you sense that they were more empathetic to persons with disabilities because they interacted with you?
Yes. I honestly think so. And, in fact, the oldest one has become a paramedic firefighter.
Wow.
Okay, we're here to music. Reverend Ray got to pay some bills, and we're going to be right back with our special guest on the other side of the break. And you're listening to CAG Do About Your Dog and You. Capital Aerial Guide Dog Users, Inc. Is sponsoring this show. And we will be back on the other side of the break with our very special guest, Ms. Joyce Feinberg.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in the Tacoma Park neighborhood of Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they probably have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. And back over to Reverend Ray for a look into Charlie's Corner.
And we still are in Charlie C. with Charlie's Corner. Our late co-host and founder, Charlie Crawford. And this segment is brought to you and sponsored by the National Capital Area Chapter, and that is a ACB, American Council of American Council of the Blind affiliate that meets in Silver Springs, Maryland, and that's every third Thursday of the month at 7 o'clock. And for more information, you can go to cagdo.org, and it will give you the information now when they Zoom calls and all. And the president of that chapter is Mr. Pat Sheehan, that we have had on the show from time to time. He's a guest host, a co-host. And so in Charlie's Corner, that we like to peer in Charlie's Corner, because we always used to say Charlie C, information about the DMV. And this is was dear to Charlie's heart, that very strong advocate for disabilities across the board, but of course being blind, specifically on the blind. And one thing we have been working on is a harm to service animals protection law that's been going, bill that's been going through the Maryland State Legislature. Now, the House bill is 234, and the Senate bill is 607. Now, the House bill went through the first time, all right. And the Senate bill, when it got to the Senate, they took some language out, and one of the things was a very important word called recklessness. There was a number of Senate people that had dogs living in Maryland and rural Maryland. They had a lot. They have dogs, and their opposition to that word, because they know that they don't maintain their dogs and keep them on leash and everything like that. So they wanted to take that word out, and so to say, if their dog, I won't say their dog, but if a dog attacked a guide dog intentional, then there will be some criminal implications. And so it came out of the House Committee on Judication, but when it went to the Senate Committee on Criminal, that's where they wanted to change it. So they watered it down somewhat. It went back to the House for the second hearing. It passed okay. They accepted it since this is the first time this happened, they figure we can come back a year, 2 years later, depends on who the delegates and all is. And now it's going to back to the Senate. And once it goes through the Senate, which there shouldn't be any problem, then it will be signed into law in May by the governor, Governor Hogan. So that's where we are. And for those who felt that it should have been named Guide Dog, well, we had to compromise a little bit because I had no idea there were so many people that had service animals. But the one thing is that was concerned that people was concerned it was going to involve emotional animals. It do not. It excludes emotional animals. This is definitely just for service animals that have, can be shown, be proven that they have been properly trained and have identification to that fact. So we will let you know more about where the bill is and when it will be signed into law. Some of us certainly will be invited down to be part of the signing by the Maryland governor. So we'll let you know about it more, and that's in Charlie Place. And Charlie would be probably two-thirds of the pie happy, but he also know that it's never a sprint. That is always a is always a long run. I mean, Charlie know that. So that's Charlie's Charlie's place, Charlie's corner, and we will come back. And I know people have been asking, are we going to get another someone to replace Charlie? Well, no one can replace Charlie, but they were wondering if we're going to get a co-host in the future to sit as a co-host. And we are looking for co-hosts. We're doing some searching, and we will let you know. We know Charlie passed in September, and so we hope to have a co-host by September that will be the new co-host for Capital Area Guide Dog Users, CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. But we definitely will still keep Charlie's Corner. We would always keep Charlie's Corner and bring you information about dealing with guide dogs in terms of accessibility, being able to get into places, being accepted, and being protected. Those are two major things that our purpose and aim is, to let the public know about guide dogs and getting them accepted in every aspect of life, and then also being protected. All righty, so that's Charlie's Corner. I'll bring you information to the DMV. Ms. Renee, back over to you, and properly introduce our very special guest, but we may continue.
Okay. Well, many women go about their daily lives creating paths for women who come behind them, never knowing that they even left a path. Our guest, Joyce Feinberg, was a professional woman who began to lose her sight in her early 30s, and she continues to share how she coped. So, Joyce, how did it impact your career?
Well, that was the interesting part, because if you think about it, dogs are allowed in hospitals, but laboratories often have a set sign that says no admittance, only approved personnel, that type of thing. So most labs were willing to allow myself in, and in that case allowed my dog in. Of course, they cared more about my dog than they cared about me. But we kind of opened up the door a little bit, but I did not want my dog physically in the lab with me because there are all sorts of biohazards there that could harm a human, much less a dog. So he often stayed in a pathologist's office. A pathologist is a specialized doctor that kind of leads the clinical laboratory environment. And more people seem to visit that office than they ever did since they started for some strange reason. I had to hold off certain customers from feeding him because he was already overweight to begin with, but they would bring in cookies, biscuits, that type of thing. And in fact, one time there was one customer who had bought these Oreo-style cookies from PetSmart and had laid them out to bring them in the next day to bring it to Garrett, who was my dog at the time. And her daughter grabbed the plate and brought it up for movie night. And before the mother could get comments out, the daughter took a bite into the cookie and said, "What is this? This doesn't taste like an Oreo."
Oh, that's funny.
And no, actually, on the serious side, one time I had gotten really sick at one of the customer accounts. Actually, it was overnight, and they took me by ambulance to one of the local hospitals, and the people at the hotel took very good care of my dog.
Wow.
Needless to say, I could not do that. It was in a rural part of Tennessee, and so the hotel people were just fantastic. But, of course, everybody would come in. The nurses would come in and say, "Oh, I hear you have a dog. Where is he?"
So, Joyce, let me ask you this. In terms of how did you became familiar with a guide dog, and what made you chose the school you went to, and what was your experience at the school? Because a lot of people that went to school did not make it through, go through the whole training thing. They had no idea it was going to be that type of requirement in terms of physical, mental, and all of that. So how did you choose the school, and what made you go to the school you went to, and what was your experience?
Oh, you mean the doggy boot camp? as I had started to comment earlier, a good friend of mine who also worked for the company I was working for grew up around Morristown, New Jersey, the home of the Seeing Eye. And so she was worried about me traveling, and even though I was doing okay, she thought I would do much better with the dog. And she's a dog person, and I had small dogs growing up, so she knocked me around and said, "You will apply." And actually got me on the phone as she logged into the website and helped me apply. In fact, she was one of my references, so I did apply to the Seeing Eye around December of 2002, and I was actually down in Florida helping to teach a class when I got the acceptance in May of 2003, and I arrived in Morristown at the end of August 2003, and on Labor Day that year, I got my first dog, a Labrador.
And what was your experience like there for you? I mean, was it what you thought it would be, or what?
I honestly did not know what it would be because I had never been around a guide dog. I had not even really been around the blind community. So that was really my first immersion into the blind community at that point. And I was only one of, I think, four students who had any sight at all in that class. But it was interesting. It taught me a lot. And having loved dogs, I just loved the fact that I could take a dog with me wherever I would be going, and at least I had some companionship at that point and some safety, because the only time he ever barked was when there was another creature around that was not human and not another dog or cat. It would be an unusual animal, like a chicken. There was one time he barked at a chicken. and fox, because, again, when you take your dog out at night, it's often dark, and if you're in a strange area, and a lot of these hotels have woods surrounding them, you never know what kind of creatures may start coming out.
Take this. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Joyce, because one of the things I found, and I'm like you, the first, you know, being around that many blind persons and at the accomplishment level that those persons were, because people get guide dogs to seeing that, they pretty much are a personality. How did you or did you compare yourself with these personalities, and in terms of their blind skills and your blind skills and after two? Because you can't help for looking at, you know, those persons and see where they are in their life and where you are in your life. Did you find yourself doing that? And if you did, how did you measure up?
Well, yes, I did. And I felt I was far below them, that they were so accomplished in the things that they were doing and had done. And I was still somewhat new. And unfortunately, the state of Maryland Rehabilitative Services, when I went to them, really did not want to have anything to do with me because I was already fully employed. So everything I was learning on my own. So I had not learned Braille. In fact, I've just started to learn it over the last couple weeks from somebody. And I was learning how to use the CCTV and trying to work with my computer with screen readers and magnification.
Okay, that's some music. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come right back to you. Okay, this is Reverend Radio Ray Razor, the host of CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, sponsored by Capital Area Guide Dog Users and Inc. And we're going to be back on the other side of a short break with our special guest, Miss Joyce Feinberg. Miss Renee.
You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located in the nation's capital. Back over to Reverend Ray and our guest, Joyce Feinberg.
Okay. And Joyce, picking back up on your skills, because this is the seventh dog I have, and every time I have come back from seeing that, I have come back home and told my wife that I learned this. I learned about this, and, you know, and what these people doing and what I'm not doing and and all, and I need to step up my game. And, I mean, you know, this is over 40-some years of still, you know, going to CNI and meeting different people from around the country and the kind of things that they, you know, that they do I didn't wasn't aware of. And so in that vein, now, you on – what number dog are you on now?
I am currently on number two, and I will be having my – Juno walk for number three next week.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
Elroy
okay.
is retired.
Yes, he's almost 10 and a half years old.
Okay, I didn't realize that. So you'll be okay. Now, so let me ask you this: what was the difference between the first time and the second time you went to seeing that?
Well, both times have been totally different because of the environment. The first time, what they call the downtown lounge, was not available, so we waited in the van in between walks. And the second time I went, the facility was under renovations, so we were living in a hotel for the entire time. So that was a bit different, but actually very good for me, because I was living in hotels along the way with my work.
Right, okay.
And so it helped teach Elroy about elevators quite a bit, because I was involved in this one project, and the hotel I was staying at had four elevators, two on either side of the hallway. And as we would approach him, he would check the first one. If it was open, he'd take me in. And if it was closed, he'd go to the next one and to the next one, to the next one. And if all four were closed, he put me right in front of the button to call for the elevator.
Wow.
So
let me ask you a question. You talk about retiring Elroy. Do you have plans for Elroy after you retire him? Where will he go?
Well, if I'm lucky, there have been a couple of people who have offered to possibly take him, and that will end up being the key, because I won't give him up until I'm actually heading to class type
gotcha.
Of thing. Even
and
though he's slowed down quite a bit, I'm not really going too many places, so I can deal with it.
Right.
Well, let me ask you another question. Since you talk about him slowing down, how did you assess that it was time to consider retiring him and getting another dog? What were the signs that you noted?
It was primarily the slowing down, where I'm walking a little bit beyond him instead of him walking beyond me. And
mm-hmm.
as a result, I kept having to tell him to hurry up, the hup up command. And he would get there and then slow down again, and then he'd be panting a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
The end of last year, I made that hard decision
yeah.
to put in a new application.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that's the part when you have to finally make that decision to do that, especially if they still working sort of, you have to make that decision. So, and currently, do you have a, because I know CNI used to tell people when they get their first dog, please don't have any demands on what kind of dog, what, and none of that. And usually after your second dog or so, people usually have a, a desire. So do you have a particular
preference?
Breed? Preference?
Well, with dog number two, I want to stay with the lab because
okay.
of the fact I had noticed there were a number of people afraid of dogs in some of the hospitals I visited,
mm-hmm.
and I was concerned a shepherd might scare them a little bit more. And I did not want the responsibility of a long-haired dog of a golden retriever. So now for dog number three, my main requirement will be I'd like a short-haired dog. So whether it's a
mm-hmm.
shepherd, whether it's a lab or a cross, I don't care.
Oh, okay.
But the shorter hair, especially since I'm still living with my father, he's a little bit allergic to the dog fur. So
now
it'll make it a little bit easier.
Okay, I'd like you to answer this. We started the show with Stop Dogging Me Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Having a Guide Dog. So tell me, what is you found the good of having a guide dog?
The good has been the companionship and the ability to maneuver me around difficult areas and remember areas that maybe he had only visited once or twice, to know how to
right.
get from point A to point B without much direction.
Right. And the bad of having a guide dog?
That people are afraid of dogs, even if they're assisting you. And so they would say, we do not want this person here, and not even tell me. They tell my boss. Without
mm-hmm.
trying to work it out with me. But in general, there are very few disadvantages, in my opinion, to having a dog.
Mm. Okay. And you're going through the ugly now. Now, your first dog, what happened to your first dog, and why did you had to retire, or what did happen to the first?
Well, my first guide, like I said, his name was Garrett. He was also a Labrador Retriever. I had to fly to New Jersey, and coming off the airplane, somebody mentioned that my dog really looked uncomfortable underneath the seats in front of me. And when we had to come out, when we got home, we had to come down a ladder, a flight of stairs outside, and he really had a lot of problems doing that. So I knew at that point, plus he was having some physical issues. So I just couldn't have him doing things in hospitals.
So you didn't have him long at all then?
Actually, I had him for 9.5 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
He was 11 when he retired.
My goodness. You must take good care of your dogs, 10, 11. Now, God knows if you had a husband, he probably lived about, what, 100 or something? That's okay. I ain't going to get in that. All right, George. Well, you have been such a wonderful guest, and I love your sense of humor. I really do.
Thank you.
And thank you so much. You have been such a wonderful guest. And this Renee, and this show is posted on our website, CAGDU, about your dog and you, CAGDU.org. And we thank you for being such a gracious guest and all. And God bless you, and we will be seeing you along the way. Thank you, George.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Renee, well, I hope and I think our guests would say we did accomplish the three things we usually like to do on this show, and that's one, to be informative, two, to be inspirational, and three, to be entertaining. So this is anything to say as we depart, Ms. Renee?
No, I just learned so much from every guest. And I just, here again, just understanding that people are in different places and different spaces and how people cope with life on life's terms, basically.
You just never know. You always learn. So again, I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and you've been listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. is the sponsor that have been bringing you CAGDU, about your dog and you. And as we always like to say, to remember, you can hug your honey, but please pet your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to CAGDU, about your dog and you. Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We're located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com, or you can call us at 301-263-7371. That's 263-7371. We'll see you next week, Friday, 3 o'clock p.m. Be here or be square.